As promised, we're joined right now by CBS football analyst. He is a two-time Super Bowl champion, a seven-year NFL vet, the 62nd pick overall in 2005 out of Florida State. Bryant McFadden is my guest. Bryant, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Jim. Thank you for having me.
It is so good to have you. All right, so a lot of things that I could talk to you about, starting with either college or pro football, but let me ask you about the aftermath, Bryant, of the Steelers-Browns game last week. Myles Garrett is in New York for that appeal today, but if you were to go back to last week, what were you thinking when you saw him attempt to hit Mason Rudolph with his own helmet, and have you ever seen anything like that on a football field?
Well, I was shocked. I was surprised. We know Myles Garrett is a guy that goes full throttle every time he's on the football field. Every snap is a meaningful snap for him. And he actually, you know, acted as such in that play. And after the play was over, of course, there were some extracurricular activities by both parties, Mason Rudolph and Myles Garrett. But to see Myles Garrett swing the helmet and actually make contact, I mean, my mouth dropped down to the floor. I've never seen anything like that happen. I've seen, you know, a lot of individuals go at it. You know, we've seen over and over again, right, guys swinging at each other with their fists connected on helmet, connected the helmet, you know, and even seeing people kick each other, things like that. But I've never seen a player swing a helmet and hit another player that was without his helmet. I've never seen that before. So I was surprised, but you know, the NFL went and handled the situation as such. I really felt like Mason Rudolph should have been suspended as well. He wasn't. And, you know, I guess we have to wait and see what happens with Garrett and his appeal.
So, Brian, lay that out. Why was Mason Rudolph also culpable? What did he do that warranted a suspension?
He was involved. Because if Mason Rudolph never attacked Myles Garrett, right, would Myles Garrett have swung the helmet at Mason Rudolph? I don't think so. And there's two sides to every story, and both individuals are wrong. I think Myles Garrett was wrong for driving Mason Rudolph into the ground like he did, and I think that prompted Mason to try to take Myles Garrett's helmet off, and eventually he kicked him in the groin area. I don't know if that was accidental or not, but one incident led to another. So if Myles Garrett, if they pull Myles Garrett, and this is a hypothetical, Jim, if they pull Myles Garrett off of Mason and Mason never confronted Myles Garrett, would Myles Garrett have swung the helmet at Mason Rudolph? I don't think so.
Bryant McFadden joining us. Let me ask you this. Like, we don't know exactly. I mean, we saw the way it played out. We've seen the video, Bryant, over and over again. We don't know exactly what was said. We don't know everything that took place. In your mind, is there ever a scenario where it's okay to swing a helmet on a guy the way he did?
No. No, no. I mean, when you play in the NFL, Jim, we all are connected, and we all have a mutual respect for each other. And I think there is a better way to handle certain issues. And when you swing a helmet in a moment where you're extremely emotional, you can actually cause serious harm to that individual. And our job is to, in between the lines, our job is to do whatever we need to do for our team to win ball games. But outside the lines, you want that individual to go home to their family, healthy, and continue to do what they've been called to do, which is play football. So I don't know if something was said, and if it was, that's not a bad that is a bad look on Mason. But Myles Garrett, you have to try to handle yourself as a professional. And the thing is about they're getting ready to play each other in a few weeks. There's a way to get back without it being known to the public, like we saw last Thursday night. So it wasn't a good look for both parties, including for Myles Garrett. And I think, you know, he's a great person. He's a heck of a football player. His emotions just got the best of him.
We're talking to Bryant McFadden. He's a CBS football analyst, a two-time Super Bowl champion. Hey, Bryant, I don't want to spend all this time on that, but you just said something else pretty interesting. You said that they're going to play each other again, and there's a way to get some get back. Like, what are you talking about? Like, what could you have done? Talk to me, man. Hey, lay it out.
Hey, Jim, you know what? When you play defense, your job is to hit the offensive player at any given time. And if I'm Myles Garrett, and I'm just giving you a hypothetical based on some of the experiences I've been around, oh, we got Pittsburgh coming up. Mason Rudolph, you said, and this is a hypothetical, we're just saying if Mason said something or if, you know, he accidentally kick them in the groin or whatever the case may be, I'm going to have an opportunity to tackle you. And when I tackle you, I'm going to do some extra. I mean, you can kind of grab him by the Adam's apple if you want to underneath his helmet. I mean, you can try to poke his eyes out a little bit. I mean, there are things you can do that would probably, if they found out about it, would only warrant a fine. And I think you're okay with that fine than being suspended for the rest of the season.
Now, Brian, you know the game's changed since you played it, but let me ask you that. I mean, did you ever have any of those get-backs? Did you ever have an opportunity where you thought, hey, there's a trachea blast right there in front of me. I'm going to take that opportunity. I might get in a little eye gouge right here.
Nah, you know what? I never had that incident, but I can tell you this much. In college, we were playing, I think it was Wake Forest, and we blocked the field goal. And you know, I didn't have no issue with any of the Wake Forest players. Clearly, at that time, we were always beating them up anyway, so it was like, you know, take your beating and going back home. But I recovered the fumble, and I tried to get up and run with the fumble, but I fell. And when I fell, the offensive lineman jumped on top of me because they were trying to get the ball back. Granted, it didn't matter because it was a fourth down play anyway, you know what I mean? So I had the ball. And when I tell you, one of the offensive linemen, he was probably about 340, 320, and at that time I was 185, 190. I mean, he literally grabbed me underneath my armpit. And I didn't know I actually had a muscle or tendon there, whatever it was. But when he grabbed me, my whole right side went numb, and I just hollered, "I don't want the ball, you can have it." And so those are the things that kind of happen underneath the pile. I've heard people, you know, get kicked in the groin area. I heard people get their eyes poked out. You know, that's why a lot of players wear a lot of shields nowadays, Jim, because you really can't touch their eyes underneath the pod when they have a shield on, a visor on.
Absolutely. Brian McFadden joining us. I would, too. I absolutely would. You know, you mentioned playing ball at Florida State, Bryant. I got to ask you, because you came a little bit after the fact, but you played DB. I got to ask you about one of my all-time favorite athletes, Terrell Buckley. How about T-Buck? How prominent a member was he of that Seminole family? And as you were coming up as a DB, what did you think about him and his game?
Man, I love T-Buck coming up. Man, I used to call T-Buck the three-step king. If a quarterback ran a three-step route on T-Buck, it's a book. He's taking that to the house. And I think, you know, go back to the famous highlight in Ann Arbor. I can't remember the quarterback, but I remember he took one back against Desmond Howard. T-Buck was very, very influential in my career when I was there. He actually came back and studied with me. We used to watch tape together. He's doing a tremendous job at Mississippi State. He's one of the best. You know, Deion Sanders is the first defensive back you talk about. He's the first defensive player you talk about when you talk about Florida State legends. But T-Buck is right there. I mean, in 3 years, Jim, T-Buck had 21 interceptions. So think about this. By his sophomore year, he was a made man. He was an All-American. But for him to have 21 interceptions in 3 years tells you what type of ball hawk he was. I mean, number 27, he's a legendary player.
Man, I'm so glad to hear you say that, Brian. I mean, sincerely, I am so glad to hear you say that, because when he went to the pros and he went to Green Bay and they'd have those legendary battles with the Dallas Cowboys and Michael Irvin sometimes would turn him inside out, it was always me against the world. I'd always be defending this guy. I'm like, you just don't understand about T-Buck. You don't understand about his ball-hawking ability. You don't understand this guy's vert, his athletic ability. You just don't. You can't explain T-Buck, man. He had that it. I'm so glad to hear you say that. Brian McFadden is joining us. Now, you're a two-time Super Bowl champ. You had a great career in the NFL in Florida State. Very few people have a career like the one you've had, and even fewer make the transition to life after football. I've got to ask, what has that transition been like for you?
It's been fun. You know, it's almost like starting over as a rookie, learning the strides, learning from guys like yourself and others that I watch and I learn from and try to pick up little things here and there, and just an opportunity to continue to get better. I love that. I love learning, starting from ground zero and getting better. And also, too, as a former player, I think it's imperative for me when someone is watching me or listening to me to learn. I think I need to inform. I need to entertain. I need to educate. And when I'm talking about the game of football, Jim, I view every individual that's listening to me or watching me as my 70-year-old aunt. If I can get her to understand the game better and appreciate the game better, I did my job. And I think that's how I look at what I'm doing now. Make sure whoever's listening to me, when they walk away, yo, B-Mac, I learned something from B-Mac. Wow. Now I can watch the game better, because one thing about anything that you're visually entertaining, when you know what you're watching, you understand it better, and you can enjoy it better.
Brian McFadden joining us. Here's the thing. I mean, you know, you play the game for a long time at a very high level, so you've got that insight. However, not every analyst gets the opportunity you have right now and will handle it the way you do. Something I respect about you is you'll let people behind the scenes. If there's something you want to say, you're going to go ahead and say it. As an example, you've got this amazing story that you told recently about what happened the night before the Super Bowl against the Cardinals. Brian, for those who do not know, what did some of you and your teammates get up to that night?
Hey, Jim, you trying to stir the pot up, huh?
No, it's an amazing story.
Yo, okay, in Pittsburgh, the unique thing about our team, we did everything together. That's why we won so much, because we actually loved each other. We actually rocked with each other. And we used to always play cards every road trip, every home game, the week of practices. We used to always play cards. That was an opportunity for us to get together. So the second Super Bowl, which was in Tampa against Arizona, it was our normal routine. Like the playoff stretch, we would stay up all night playing cards, playing a game called Blu-ray. If you never heard of what Blu-ray is, look it up. It's a great game. This is one of the best card games I've ever played. But the night before the Super Bowl, it was a big deal. You know what I mean? We were playing our Super Bowl for many of us. It was the second Super Bowl in 4 years. So we're excited, and we used to always gather, probably, I think, with James Ferrier room. So, you know, all the big-name players would be in there, you know what I mean? James Ferrier, Casey Hampton, James Harrison, Ike Taylor, Deshae Townsend. You know, Troy would be in there, but Troy would be like a narrator. He never really participated, but he'd be like the commentator, you know what I mean? He'd just be talking on the sideline. Ryan Clark, everybody would be in there. So that particular night, Jim, we started the game after we got done with our final meetings, you know what I mean, our little snack, whatever the case was. We probably started playing around 10:45 because we relocated to a new hotel that Saturday
right,
to get away from our family. So we started around 10:45, Jim, and I didn't get to my room until like maybe a quarter to 8, like
dude,
almost 8 a.m.
So you played cards the entire night before the Super Bowl and didn't even get to your room until a quarter to 8 a.m.
Yo, Jim, when I walked into my room, I literally cussed myself out because I said, D-Mac, you're so stupid. That didn't even make any sense. But everybody, when we all left together. That's the thing. Like a few guys that weren't playing kind of left a few hours before, a quarter to 8. But the majority of us, we stayed there all night. And I remember James Harrison told James Ferrier, Potsy was like, yo, man, y'all see what time it is? Man, the sun is coming up, right? So we like, man, we tripping. He's like, listen, this can't get out to nobody now. Y'all keep this to yourselves. And he said, one thing I know about when you're not prepared, you're going to be alert because you're so afraid that you're not prepared. You're actually going to be more alert than if you got the proper amount of rest. At that time, it didn't make any sense, but it kind of made sense when we got into the flow of the game because we were like, everybody was so afraid of messing up because we didn't get any sleep. So everybody was alert. But yeah, long story short, that was the best card game I was a part of, number one. It was the most intense card game. It was the most entertaining card game. And we went to bed around 8. We got up around 11. And by that time, once you were up, because we had to leave to go to the stadium around like 4 or 5, because remember, it's like a 6:30, 7 o'clock kickoff. I mean, we got into the locker room, everybody's eyes are red.
Dude, that's an amazing story. Did Coach, was he like, yo, man, what did y'all do last night? Or were they just so locked into their own thing, they didn't know?
They didn't know, and we made sure that was among the players that was in the room, because if we would have lost, Jim, and people would have
and it got out,
Jim, you would have killed us. You didn't even really know me at that time. You would have killed all of us, right? It'd have been worse than Odell and the boat trip. You remember the boat trip the Giants went on?
Of course.
The weekend before the Green Bay Packers playoff game.
Brad, like, what's amazing to me is, like, how were you so locked into that game? Were you not thinking, dudes, like, I know we just played this game, but this is the biggest game of our lives. Was nobody tripping on the game? Were you just all so locked in to a competitive card game?
Yeah,
or maybe was that what you needed?
Jim, at that time, the card game was the most important thing on our schedule.
More important than the Super Bowl, which was in 4 hours.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Jim, listen. When I tell you our card games used to be intense. Oh, my goodness, man. Jim, man, listen. That game was actually more intense No, I'm not going to say then that Super Bowl because we remember how that game ended. But that was probably one of the more intense games I've ever been a part of. We didn't want to leave. Think about this, from 10:30 to almost 8 o'clock a.m. Think about the amount of decks we went through.
Brian, how much money did you make that night?
Oh, my goodness. You know, this is a hypothetical. If money was involved, right? This is a hypothetical. If money was involved.
No wonder you weren't walking away, man.
Hey, yo, it was kind of low-key game-changing type money if money was involved.
if it was involved. I love that. That was the most important game on our schedule at that point.
Brian McFadden,
he is a 7-year NFL vet. He is a 2-time Super Bowl champion. He is a CBS football analyst, and he played his college ball at Florida State. Man, I kept you a long time. Brian, that was great. Let's do it again soon, man. That was a blast.
Hey. No question, Jim, and if you ever want to learn the game of Blu-ray, just let me know. I can tell you got a little bit of luck in you, and you don't mind rolling the dice a little bit. So trust me, I can definitely show you how
down
to get
me in, man. Down
Blu-ray.
Me in, I'm in. Let's do it. Brian McFadden, great job, man. Great to have you
Thank
on.
You.
That's where I'm going to learn Blu-ray. I know of the game, but I've never played the game. That is an amazing story. Great, great story. We ran heavy, so I got to get out. Brian McFadden crushing his jungle appearance.